Hello, we are The Promise of Love, bringing to you The Love Effect.
A podcast that brings you real insight and real stories about real relationships. Well, good morning. This is Rob Hollis here with Winona, and we are talking with Dr. Ayo Maria Casey Gooden, PhD, psychologist, and advocate for true love. Good morning, Dr. Ayo.
Good morning to both of you and to the listening audience. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being on our show with us. You know, you wrote this book, and this is the reason why you're here, is because I fell in love with your book, A Single Bracelet Does Not Jingle. And as I read that book, I thought, wow, this is so not just interesting, but insightful and practical. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I'm a licensed psychologist in the state of Pennsylvania. I'm also a board-certified African-centered Black psychologist. And I've been practicing for over 47 years, working with children, individuals, couples, families, and I see the same issues being repeated in terms of both what adults say about what their childhood was like that has caused pain and trauma, and couples who come together and who have issues in the family. And so over the years, as I would provide them with strategies to heal, I realized that as an individual, it's impossible for me to reach all the people who need to hear the information. So I actually was teaching a class at the University of Louisville. And at the time, I was guided to write the book so that I could start teaching my students about this information. So I started off with a book many years ago and then decided that I needed to update it and make it more current. So I wrote this particular edition of my book.
Wow. And the title itself is deeper than it looks so when you first read it. Tell us a little bit about the title.
Well, A Single Bracelet Does Not Jingle is an African proverb, of course. And I use proverbs with my clients, I use proverbs in my family, and of course I grew up with proverbs as a Black woman. Your mother might say things to you, well, in my family, my mother might say, don't let your, write a check that you can't cash, right? Or it's a poor will that doesn't roll both ways. And there were all sorts of sayings that we heard. And in the field of psychology, we use proverbs to assess a person's ability to think abstractly, which is something that many times we haven't been taught to do. And if we haven't been taught, it's very difficult to do. And I see those challenges with many of the Black children that I work with, or Latinx children that I work with. And so I said, you know, one of the things I have to make sure I'm doing is teaching them proverbs and how to interpret them so that they can expand their mind.
Wow.
That's real good.
Excellent. So as you wrote this book, I mean, you mentioned that there was a lot of clinical insights that went into this. Were there any personal experiences that fed into this book as well?
Oh, that's a really good question. Absolutely. Of course, when you get trained, and I'm trained in clinical psychology, one would think that that would provide you with all the skills you need to make a healthy choice when you're looking for a partner. And I found that it was woefully negligent in many areas. So I'm a Lincoln University of Pennsylvania graduate, and I met my husband at Lincoln, and he was just so handsome, and I fell in love right away. But what I didn't have is I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a plan to assess whether or not we were right for each other. So my husband and I married, and less than a year later, we divorced. He didn't want to be married. I wanted to be married, but he wanted to be with me. So we lived together for a while. I didn't like not being married, so we split. A little while later, we remarried. So we got married again. He was still not happy being married. So we divorced. And actually, I should say that before we divorced, we had a child together. And so I decided long time ago that I did not want to be married to somebody who didn't want to be married to me. And so I don't have a problem getting a divorce, okay? It's not what I would choose to do, especially after having a child, but I wanted him to be happy. And then a few years later, I married someone else and he married someone else. And then a few years later, I got divorced and he was still married. So I started looking at this experience of relationships and how to pick someone because I said, I should be better at this being a psychologist. So I started looking at what were the things that I didn't do? What didn't I plan for? What were the characteristics I was looking for? And what was it I didn't want? And so, you know, one of the things I would do is tell people starting off, I'm looking for a father for my son and a husband. Let's be real clear. If you're not ready to be a father and a husband, don't even want you to waste your time because you'll be wasting mine. So I started creating this list and I started doing workshops and presentations on the topic of how to find your ideal partner. And so as I continued to do those workshops, of course, I started putting together things, and then I ended up having the opportunity to teach a class on relationships at the University of Louisville. And I was advised, write a book for that class. So I wrote A Single Bracelet Does Not Jingle. But that was, gosh, that was back in the 90s. And of course I had to update it for our current book because there's so many things that are now available but that weren't available back in my day, like computers. So computer dating became something that happened, and so I wanted to incorporate that into my book. So my own personal experiences being divorced certainly played into it, and I must say the last step was that my son's father and I remarried after I divorced my husband and he divorced his wife. We remarried and we've been together ever since. Quite happily, so, I might add.
So I have a question. Yes. So y'all have been three times? Am I correct?
Three times married.
Ooh,
that's
wow.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Okay. That's a little different for most people, but it was all about, and it was just about respecting what he wanted and what he needed. He respected me and married me, but he wasn't satisfied. And it took him to be a little more mature to figure out that I was the right one for him. And so he came back and I was quite pleased because he was my first love.
Wow.
So when did you all marry the first time?
When?
How old were you when you married the first time?
I had graduated from college and some might say I'm a cougar. He's a year younger than I am. And so I had to wait for him to graduate from college. And after he graduated, we got married the year that he graduated. So it was back in the 70s when we got married the first time. Let's see, I graduated in 74, so it would have been 75. Yeah, we got married in 75.
Okay.
You know, as I read your book, I felt like, at least in this particular area, we're either kindred spirits or life has taught us the same lessons.
Yeah.
And that is in the area of finding your foundation in healing. Mm-hmm. Now, clearly, you have had to go through a lot of healing to get to a place where you could have a good, solid, long-term relationship and marriage. But my question to you is, whenever you meet someone, how can you tell if your love interest has gone through those steps of healing and if they are ready? How do you determine that?
Right, you have to do an assessment. And that's one of the things that I teach people is that you have to be able to look at, first of all, who you are. You have to know, as the ancient Cretans, or as most people know them, Egyptians have said, know thyself. That's know the thyself. First step. Because you can't really know your partner or know what you want if you don't know who you are first and foremost. So if you have hurts, if you have traumas that you haven't healed from, you're going to carry those challenges with you into a relationship, and it's going to have an unhealthy effect on the relationship. Indeed. And many times that's what causes many people to be attracted to someone else who is unhealthy, is that, once again, they're kindred spirits from the standpoint of I'm unhealthy and you're unhealthy. And so it allows me to stay unhealthy. But if I heal myself, if I get healed by reaching out once again and getting professional care to do the healing, because some people, and there are a few people who can heal themselves, no doubt, who read, you know, the books, who do the work, who, you know, address their issues. But for the most part, we need to have a professional. And I tell people all the time, for Black people, you need to have a Black therapist who is conscious, somebody who understands your culture and the experiences of Black people. If you're Latinx, then you need somebody who's Latinx. If you're Asian, you need somebody who's Asian. If you're Native, you need somebody who's Native. Somebody who understands and can be responsive to the cultural, societal traumas that you've experienced. Now, I also believe that for the most part, Black therapists and conscious, and I call them melanics, people of color, Natives, Asians, Latinx, etc., are more appropriate for Caucasians, because Caucasians don't understand racism and the impact of racism on them, or how it's played out with melanics. And so when you're seeking a therapist, it is best to find someone from the same cultural background, with the exception, as I said, for Caucasians who need to learn how to be anti-racists and who want to really learn some very healthy strategies. You need to go to someone who's African-centered, because we have strategies that Eurocentric therapists do not possess.
Wow. And that is pretty intense. Pretty intense. You had a quote in your book, and I really latched onto this because it resonated with me. You say, most people are taught to blindly trust people based on who they are supposed to represent. So whenever you first meet someone, you apply stereotypes that culture told you about that person, depending on how they identify themselves. And then you trust the stereotype as opposed to the person. I'm assuming that's what you mean by that. What is the alternative whenever you first meet? How would you base your trust in someone?
Well, trust has to be earned. And you know how we are as Black people. Sometimes the first step of trust is, do you look like me? Okay, that's level one, okay? Then level two is, let's talk about some things and see if we agree on them. The less we agree, the less likely I can trust you. But it's also watching what a person does over a period of time. And that best period of time is over, as my friend who wrote a book on relationships, Dr. Paris Finner Williams said, over four seasons. So a year. A lot of people want to rush. It's like, especially young people, it's like, I've known them now for a week. Isn't this appropriate now for me to jump? I'm saying a week? I mean, what can you know in a week?
Exactly.
But that's why I put the questions I did in my book, so that you can start knowing someone at that level. But even if I tell you that's who I am and I answer all the questions correctly, you need to see that that's who I am over a period of time. And so you need to see them in good weather, bad weather, good times, hard times, with their family, without their family, with their friends, without their friends, because all of these things tell you who a person is. How do you spend your free time? What do you do? Okay? So you have to experience that with the person in order to get to know the person and establish a level of trust.
Wow. So it's a matter of how they align with what they say, how their actions align with what they say. But also what I'm hearing, and this one's new for me, is it's agreement. If they're saying things that they may not be untrustworthy, they just might be things that you don't agree with.
Sure.
And in that disagreement, you can agree to disagree, but you can also agree that we're not right for each other because my heart and your heart are not aligned in this area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And depending upon who you are, certain things can be used as deal breakers right off the bat. So, for example, a deal breaker could be, I don't smoke, but you do. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. Deal breaker. You use drugs. I don't use drugs. That's a deal breaker. I don't drink. You drink. That's a deal breaker. You vote for 45 and I'm voting for Biden. So that's a deal breaker. You know, we can look at certain behaviors and say, yeah, that's not going to work for me. Thanks. Mm-hmm. But I've got to keep it moving. And for some people, that's very difficult. If they see other things that they like about somebody, they want to cast aside all of the reasons they shouldn't be with the person. Same. Because usually our loneliness drives us into yes. relationships.
Indeed, yes. Wow. And another thing you said in your book was, when you have a love partner, if your love partner does not make you a better person, it's not a healthy love. So at the beginning of a relationship, you have that euphoria that makes you feel like a better person. But what's the difference between actually being a better person and just being happier?
That's a good question. Well, you can feel happy because you have somebody in your life, but you may find yourself doing things that you don't believe are the correct things to do. So that you may engage in behaviors that are unhealthy as a result of being with that partner. Let's use drinking. My partner drinks, so I start drinking. My partner smokes, so he says, come on, have some with me, and so I start smoking. Or he sits and watches TV all day and plays video games, and I never did that. I was very active, and so that doesn't fit with me. So it could be something as simple as that, or it could be something more complex. It could be that when we get together, this person has a temper, and if I don't wear the right clothes, or if I don't wear my hair the right way, this person goes off on me, and next thing you know, he's using physical force to express himself. Well, I could say, I did that. I made him do that to me by dressing like this. I knew he didn't like this dress. I knew he didn't like my hair this way. And so we make excuses for the inappropriate behavior of our partners, and we accommodate our partner in order to avoid the either verbal, physical, or emotional abuse. Because it could be just that I'm gonna be called names as a result, and I don't feel good about that. But when he's treating me good, I feel really good about the relationship, and so I stay. Or it could be that I now have a child by this person, and I don't want to be a single parent mom. So it doesn't make me a better person now. It started off really good, but now that I have a child, he's changed his behavior, and the relationship goes down. I'm not happy, he's not happy. We argue most of the time, but in public, we can fake out an appearance of being happy, and I'm doing better because after all, look, he's bought me this car, he's bought me this wonderful house, and look at my clothes and my jewelry. So people think, and I also rationalize, that I'm better off with him than I was before because I have all these physical things, these glitter and gold without the substance.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that ties right into something. I wasn't even going to ask you about this, but you rolled right into it. You mentioned that when you make decisions based on things, people are readily discarded as empty containers. Valuing things over people is an immature and limited way of functioning. Wow, that's awesome.
Well, let me tell you that part of learning about our African heritage helps me to understand that process. The highest value for African people has always been relationships. The highest value for Caucasians has always been things.
Okay.
We have to keep in mind that many of our people who are here were kidnapped, although not everybody who came here came as kidnapped people. But for those of us who are living here in a Eurocentric society, what we have learned is to start valuing what Caucasians value, which is things. Whether it's a car, shoes, a house, whatever it is, gold around my neck, whatever. And so that becomes the focus of life. We lack a spiritual connection with who we are as a people, which is why we engage in unhealthy behaviors, is because our spirituality has been damaged, or for some people, they lack spirituality altogether. So Black people who are truly African-centered value relationships over things. And that is how we start healing, is to focus on each other and to focus on what's really truly important, which are people, not things.
Wow. You know, in that statement, you have truly blessed me, because as you mentioned, we are, as a society, focused on what is the next thing I'm going to get, what's the next milestone, what's the next accomplishment. And sometimes we steamroll on towards those accomplishments while forsaking the relationships that really make life worth living.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Absolutely.
So as we close this out, I mean, I could talk to you all day long, but before just closing this out, I was wondering if there's one last tagline or concept that you would like to express, get across to the people listening to this podcast.
That's a good question. If I could leave people with anything, it would certainly be to be courageous enough to seek out professional help to resolve any of those issues that you may have been holding on to for years, or any new recent hurts that you're holding on to that interfere with your ability to trust, your ability to believe in that you are a worthy person, because that's usually the beginning, where something has happened to us and as a result we believe that we're unworthy, or because something has happened to us it makes us feel that that neglect was somehow deserving, and if it wasn't deserving we want to get revenge, and so we go out into the world looking to hurt people because we've been hurt and we want to pass our pain along. And so I would say to people, the best way to heal the world is for us to start off with ourselves and to look at healing strategies, and especially for Black people to learn Black history, not since slavery, before slavery history and after slavery history, because our history didn't start with slavery. In fact, let me say that the first people on North, South, and Central America were Blacks. And I recommend people looking up the Olmecs, which is proof positive that Black people were here building pyramids long before slavery was created as a way to build up this country. So I would say, learn your history, know the truth, understand that you are beautiful, you are handsome, you are brilliant, and that we must change how we see ourselves by learning the truth and getting the support we need. And certainly I recommend, the Black social workers, the Black psychologists, as a resource that you can go to get the healing that you need. And of course, our hosts are experts in that field. The Hollises are experts who you can go to get the proper spiritual and other healing that you need. Because if you don't start there, you're not going to be successful. Wow. Ashe.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ayo. You yes, have truly you. Been an inspiration to us, and I hope that our listenership also receives at least a fraction of the inspiration that we received today, because you're awesome.
Yes. Thank you.
Love your book. I love your insights, and I look forward to continuing to work with you in this field, because you're definitely a leader, not just in your community, but I believe nationally as well.
Well, thank you very much. Asante sana.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to The Love Effect. Respectfully, we ask you to hit that subscribe button to help us keep this going. And if you'd really like some detailed guidance on how to find and confirm true love, come visit us at stepstofindtruelove.com. That's www.stepstofindtruelove.com. Blessings to you.